Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And joining me today, direct from Germany and drinking a beer because it's late at night where he is, even though I'm just getting started with my day, is an entrepreneur who at 23 years old launched Casakanda, a flash site that, a flash e-commerce site. 9 months later, he sold the business. He followed that up by creating an even bigger, faster-growing company. It's called Lazara. It's an e-commerce site that offers shockingly low prices because it partners directly with factories in China. His name is Roman Kirsch, and I'm excited to find out about him. If you're in the U.S., you may not have known as much about him as people in Europe, but I've been doing a lot of reading about him. He is like a hero to the European startup community, and I'm excited to find out how he built his businesses. This interview is sponsored by the company that will host your website, right? It's called HostGator, and the company that will help you hire your next great developer so you can build phenomenal businesses. It's called TopTal. I'll tell you more about them later. First, Roman, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
Hey, what did you sell the first business for?
Well, we sold it to a US business, and the story behind the sale is actually quite interesting because it was a shock, like, it was a very short amount of time, as you said, 9 months from founding the company and actually selling it. And we never planned on selling it, by no means that early. But we sold it to a U.S. business called Fab.com, which a lot of people might know from at least the older generation.
Yeah, because Fab.com was this fast-growing e-commerce site. Actually, it started out as like a portal for the gay community, right? Something like that, or a content site. Yeah. Then it became a flash site. It became worth about $1 billion. And then rumors were that it was sold for low millions of dollars.
Exactly. So we ended up selling our business to Fab.com, in a joint effort to kind of build up a global brand. And at the age of 23, it made perfect sense because, you know, we as young entrepreneurs always, hustling, trying to kind of go to the next fundraise, although having good metrics, you're still 23 and people say, what have you done before? And you're like, yeah, just studying. So it just made perfect sense for us to partner up. So we ended up partnering with Fab.com. I can disclose it now, an all equity deal. So we got shares in Fab.com.
How much money was it worth?
So our business was worth back then roughly 13 million US dollars.
And
so
that's what you sold it to Fab for in equity, right?
Exactly. And Fab was, I think, valued back then around $150 million. So we took the whole ride to $1 billion, and then to what you said was basically nothing again.
Yeah. And so you basically ended up with nothing at the end of that.
Exactly. It was I was very rich in experiences. And, I did a roller coaster ride and all in probably 18 months from being a poor student with big credit. And we didn't pay ourselves salary. I ended up being even poorer afterwards, right? The experiences and the insights that I gathered there was just so impressive. I mean, I was able to kind of build up the European base to, more than 300 employees at the age of 23, 24. I was the youngest person in the room, but still, running the whole business there. We were generating almost half of the revenues for the company.
Wait, for all of Fab, half of the revenue was coming from your business you were running?
Exactly, from the European
business.
You know
what, I want to understand the story of how you built it up, why you sold it. It's a short story, so we'll spend a little bit of time on it in this interview, and then we're going to go on to Lazara. But just real quick, just to give people a sense of proportion, Lazara's annual revenue is how much now?
So we know in our fourth year, so last year we ended our third year doing, we ended up at 100 million plus run rate. We'll try to double, or we're on a good way to double that this year. And we were still very small compared to the massive size of the industry that we're tackling, but we obviously want to continue doubling at least every single year.
Wow, that's fast growing, and it's all e-commerce, direct to individuals, selling things like pants and shoes, right?
Dresses. Yeah.
All right, let's understand your background a little bit. Going back to when you were 14 years old, you were an entrepreneur back then. You told our producer you used to import products then and sell them. What did you import when you were just 14 years old?
So listen, I love to hang around. So I grew up actually in a city called Hamburg, which is the second biggest city here in Germany, close to the ports. And there was, you know, a lot of tourists, it was actually the main hub for people to immigrate to US, 200 years ago. So, you know, it's a big port. A lot of tourists come there to visit. And, I actually went to the souvenir shops and asked what they would love to have. And there's like a special, Hamburg thing where you kind of have some sort of clock that circulates and you know, you put all kind of weird looking figures on it.
That's what tourists wanted. They wanted one of these clocks.
Exactly.
Okay. And you said, so the store said, sell them.
Yes, exactly. And the store said, you know, it's super hard to buy them and, you know, we always run out of business and their supply is like really not good. So if you can provide them to us, we'll happily take them. So I made this a school project. I had a few people working with me on school on it. And we imported the stuff. It was kind of strange as a 14-year-old kids to kind of call and try to kind of buy some things. So we pooled all our money together. We sold our shares to our parents so that they can kind of get a part of the business. And actually the first step was a big failure because we ended up actually buying those things. They arrived way too late, of course. And I gave them to a friend to kind of keep them because he was living closest to school. And he had a cleaning lady in his house. And the cleaning lady actually looked at it and regarded it as trash and threw it away. So that's where our first money went.
Were you the kind of person who would go into the dumpster and look for it again so you can sell it?
No, it was gone. Yeah, but it was gone.
I see. It was broken by then. So it was a waste of time to go through it. Okay.
Yes. So we had one more shot with the remaining money. And that was the products that arrived, and we had to sell them at a bit of a higher price. It worked out well. We sold all of it, but we weren't able to pay ourselves any salary, and we just said, you know, it's too much effort. Just gotta close it down. It's not scalable. But that was the first experience, and it was kind of really humbling at the same, exciting, but also humbling at the same time because you know realize how much effort you have to put into to kind of sell to people and talk to them and convince them, and it's not an easy job. Yeah, and that's I think one of the things that you know that impressed me in the very early days already.
So then, as I said earlier, you were 23. You founded Casa Conda. It was focused on design and home decor, right? What I'm wondering is, how much inspiration did you take from what Fab was doing? Fab, I got it wrong earlier. They weren't a content site. They were a social networking site that then pivoted towards e-commerce. How much were you saying, hey, you know what? There's this Fab thing in the US. Let's just create something like that here.
To be honest, none, because Fab didn't even exist when we started. So what we did, you know, we spent all summer. I was back then studying in London. And we spent kind of all summer researching ideas. And the really big new trend was actually flash sale sites and shopping clubs and outlets for fashion. So there was the biggest one until this very day is in France called Vente Privée. It's a $3 billion business. There's a few in the US like the Guild Group. There's a few in all sorts of countries. And we said, you know, fashion is great, but no one's really focusing on design and furniture and home decor. Why don't we do that? Because that's, you know, not as big as fashion, but way less competition and makes sense. And that's actually what we researched and what we kind of tried to raise money on. And we ended up raising money in, I think, July 2011. And that's also, by the way, the time when I think Fab pivoted towards from this gay social network to selling products in I think also around the same time, but we only found out about that a bit later, I think in October, November-ish. And so for us, the idea was we were inspired by the fashion shopping clubs and thought we can actually work in a different segment, different industry. Certainly, obviously, the target group was different. The logistics model was different because it's, you know, two men handling. It's not small dresses, but you kind of have to ship furniture all across Europe. And also the problems of the designers and suppliers were different. Whereas in fashion, you kind of get a lot of overstock from the season and need to kind of sell that off. There's not so much overstock in a design and a business and home decor business because, you know, there's less seasons. Their main problem was to get heard, to get kind of promotion, to help them leap into the online world. So we focused our pitch on that and less on actually the whole overstock story. Yeah.
Meaning it's less about how many sales you can get for them and more about how much recognition you could get for them?
So exactly. So the brand recognition was for them just as important. Obviously, sales matter as well. But the products that we sold were actually not out of season products or leftovers, but the products that we sold were actually some of their top selling products.
I see.
So,
what I'm wondering is, how did you get people to your site in such short period of time? How did you get anyone to notice it, sign up? It was an email newsletter based business, right? Mm-hmm. To get repeat visitors. How did you do that? How did you do that back then?
So I think we just continue to kind of share our story, and when we started, before we actually started, we did a very, so that was the, you know, times before Facebook really was big, or before there was any social networks or whatsoever. So it was really the time of Google and paid search. So what we actually did before we launched, we looked, okay, well, you know, is there a lot of competition on certain keywords? And there was actually none. So it was really a paid search play. And plus, you know, we started creating also a lot of buzz with the designers themselves, because what they had, you know, if a few followers in their niche group, but there was not so much intersection. So, you know, if someone had like super nice ceramic design glasses or whatsoever, would be a different followership than someone who was, you know, painting really nice, posters or pictures. So we kind of used their communities and got all of their communities onto our site. And that was kind of the very early starts.
And so you were building this business up. Do you remember how much revenue you had just before you sold?
Yeah, we did. It was just amazing. The first day when we launched, and we said, okay, is anyone actually going to look at the site, or is actually something going to happen? And, we ended up having, 10, 15 customers on the very first day, shipping everything kind of with our hands. So that was a very, very cool feeling. And we repeated that. So we started, as I said, in July. We went live, I think, in August, September. And then around Christmas time, we kind of had just two logistics workers. So we went into a warehouse and picked kind of everything up and shipped it just in time for Christmas, which was also very, very exciting.
Yeah,
I think by the time we sold, we were doing roughly $250,000 a month. So we're at like $3 million plus dollar run rate. Which was again after 8-9 months, something that back then was like a lot of money, because that's for us that was just incredible that we were able to scale it a bit fast just 23.
So you were starting to get some traction. You went out looking to raise money, and that's when, right around that time, as I understand it, the Rocket Internet guys said, hey, this fab thing is working in the US. Our business is copying them fast. They created Bomerang, which was kind of similar to fab. And at that point, you said, you know what? I think we should. At that point, why did you sell then? What led you to the sale?
So basically what happened is, as you exactly said, so we were kind of doing well. And there was, we see, so said, you know what? Fantastic business. You guys are hungry for that. Let's work together. Here's the term sheet. So we had a few term sheets. And back then, Rocket was this big beast, like probably also Google was 5 years ago, when everyone in the US was asking, what would you do if Google went into your business or tried to eat your lunch? And the same happened to us when actually Rocket copied us and Fab and said, we're just going to go in, spend $20 million on that. And that's when the VCs wanted to renegotiate the deals. And I said, now it's getting more risky. We have to readjust our risk preferences. And for us, it was, a tough time, because, we were, the more orders we got, the more costs we also had. So, time was ticking. But the positive thing that happened then is, because Rocket went into the European market, also Fab, as a US company, said, shit, they're eating our lunch. We should be moving aggressively into Europe. And that's when they kind of knocked on the door, and said, would you guys be willing to cooperate and make sure that we as a brand built a global business and a global platform? And that was, for us, very, very exciting and thrilling back then, especially because at that time those guys were really good in fundraising and just raised $40 million from Andreessen Horowitz.
Yeah.
ended up raising more than 100 million a few months later to invest into our European business. And that just gave us way, way bigger and better capabilities. So it was not that we always wanted to do it, but you know, we were very pragmatic about it and said that's the best way to grow something amazing and great. We want to work with kind of the winning business, and that's why we went in.
Roman, I'm looking at an article from that time written by Alexia Tsosis on TechCrunch. It says you had 250,000 members at the time of your purchase.
Exactly.
How do you get a 250,000 subscribers? I understand this whole ad. This whole.
How many do you have? How many do you have, Andrew?
I don't have 250,000 members. 250,000 is huge for an e-commerce site, number one, which is more valuable than a content site like mine because they're potential buyers, number one. And number two, to be able to do it in less than a year. Am I wrong to be in awe of that and to push a little further for more detail about how you did it? Because I feel like there's a lot to learn from that. How did you get 250,000 subscribers?
No, listen, we were at the right time. We were at the right moment at the right time because, you know, how I think also until this very day about marketing is in waves. You know, I believe that, you know, that there's a lot of innovation and change happening. And back then, for example, paid search was not, Google tried to push that into the market, but was not used so much. So we were one of the first to actually see, hey, you know, there's a lot of traffic going there. Let's kind of go for not only short tail keywords, but also do a lot of the long tail keywords, and that's how we started.
But it was nothing but ad buys.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, it was of course. So it was of course more. So basically, once we had the customers, we started working with a lot of different email marketing providers to really think about how to introduce smart CRM chains. You know, has he opened the email? What times does he usually open email? So send very, very personalized and individualized content. So we tried to innovate with the little money and the budget that we had around that, and make the best use out of kind of what we had. So it was, you know, it was not just ad buys. It was also how smart we tried to be around re-engaging customers, building up kind of CRM chains. It was about, you know, how we asked our designers and the suppliers that we worked with to create buzz in their networks, mm-hmm. and, you know, incentivize them to sign up. We kind of tried a lot and A/B tested a lot how to kind of make friends refer other friends. So we incentivized that heavily, which was back then, again, not now it sounds obvious, but, you know, we're talking about actually 2011. Where people, you know, were still very, very reluctant and hesitant to incentivize referrals, and we were one of the first ones to
What was the incentive that you guys offered?
So the more people you invited, the more actually you got as a referral bonus, and you got some extra when they bought, and basically your friends also benefited. So you could save a lot of money by doing that.
I see. And it wasn't that you were sending them checks, you were just reducing the cost of their
for the next order purchases. They kept kind of ordering more and more frequently as well.
I think a year or two before you launched, I had Andrew Mason from Groupon on here. He was doing it at like $5 or $10 per registration. I see how it grew. All right, I got a sense of how you grew it. Let me ask you this other question. The TechCrunch article from the time of the sale says that you guys sold for $10 million. I saw an article online that said TechCrunch said 11. I saw an article online that says 10. I thought you said 13. What was the amount?
It was 13.
It was 13 at the end. Yeah. It was $13 million.
Because there was also some earner and some additional options in there.
And so at the height, when the company was worth about $1 billion, take me through that. How did you feel then, or how did your life – was there any celebratory, exciting moment is what I'm fishing for?
No, I think we were never – so we were never looking actually – so what excited us most was actually, you know, being part of the vision, and we were really believing that we were part of something special. So that's, I think, what excited us the most. Like literally no one in the company looked at the share price or, you know, oh, how much are we valued? It was just very, very, you know – remember, I was, you know, assumed before that, so it was anyways as weird numbers for me. I couldn't relate to them in any way. So, the most exciting thing for us was really kind of connecting to the suppliers, continuing to grow, and we were, we were in this process of that everything we touched and did was actually working.
I see.
And adding a lot of countries in a very short amount of time. So that was kind of the most exciting part there.
All right, let me take a moment to talk about my sponsor, then I'm going to come back and find out how you found the seed for the next idea. But You know what? Last night I was at a dinner and I saw this entrepreneur at the dinner sitting next to me. And I said, what are you doing here? He said, well, I'm partially trying to partner with the company that's hosting this dinner. I said, great. I said, what are you going to do to partner with them? And he said, I built a website. I said, what do you mean you built a website? He said, I built a whole website to try to explain to them why a partnership would make sense. I got the domain and he gave me the domain. He showed me the website. I said, this looks gorgeous. What a smart idea. And I said, how did you do it? And basically what I learned is that I knew this, but he reminded me. If you have the right hosting package, adding another website costs you practically nothing, just the cost of the domain, which is less than 10 bucks, right? And then you own that domain. So think about the impression, Roman, that it makes. Someone wants to partner with you and they send you an email versus they want to partner with you and they created a whole website to explain to you why you should partner up. Well, if anyone out there wants to do that, you should know that HostGator's baby plan, just to give you a sense of how inexpensive it is, their baby plan comes with unlimited domains, which means that if you want to partner with unlimited number of companies, it's all included in the price of your hosting package. And let me look at the price here. If you follow the link that I'm about to give you guys, it's less than $5, less than $5 a month. And you get unlimited domain. So imagine you want to sell to a company. You want to partner with a company. You want to recruit somebody onto your team. You want to get a job, frankly. Any number of different use cases. For each one of them, you could just quickly fire up a new WordPress site, get a theme that's just free and looks good, put a little bit of content, and boom, you've got a URL to give them. It makes a big impression. That's one of many uses of HostGator. If you want to try them out, they're giving you an incredible offer, 50% off their already low prices. All you have to do is go to this URL that I'm about to give you. It is HostGator.com/Mixergy. HostGator.com/Mixergy. And as I said, that baby plan will cost you less than $5 a month, come with unlimited domains, unmetered disks, unmetered bandwidth, and unmetered disk space, a lot of other freebies and great things included in there. And if you're not happy, they have a 45-day money-back guarantee. That URL, again, is HostGator.com/Mixergy. Imagine you want to partner with Roman and you say, partnerwithmeroman.com, and you send him that link. Boom. All right. So while you were at Fab, Roman, coming back to your story, you started to notice something that led you to launch a new business. What was it that you noticed as you were traveling around?
No, I mean for us, at Fab, the problem with working with the designers was actually two things. One, obviously, those guys didn't really commit to a lot of volume, so they were kind of small, which means that a lot of things were immediately sold out, and it was hard to scale.
You mean at Fab, a lot of things that they were buying were small, right? And small lots.
So basically, that was number one. Number two is actually obviously that we didn't really make enough per order. The margins were not amazing. And that's when the idea came to actually look at, what can we produce ourselves, or where can we kind of pull the designs, maybe, approach factories. And in that process, I started talking to a lot of different factories and really tried to spend a lot of time, with figuring out where this industry on the supply side is going. And so I left Fab. Took off for a few months, traveled the world. And one of the things that I realized is that that there was a lot of middlemen, but that this was changing quickly thanks to kind of platforms like Alibaba, where kind of factories were not having electricity 5 years ago, but then ended up having smartphones and laptops and selling to all kind of customers around the world to countries that they didn't even know existed before. That was kind of exciting for me because it was, the whole industry was ripe for disruption. And that's actually one of the things that we learned and said, what if we could actually do a fantastic business around that, and looked at, different markets, different industries, and ended up again in fashion, and saw that there was, a big opportunity to
fashion. Why fashion specifically?
Well, first of all, I think if you look at the fashion market, and that's also how we see it, it's the biggest retail market together with food. But obviously, we don't want to do cross border food. for us, it was just a lot of usually innovation trickles down. So if you think of it as a pyramid, then a lot of the innovation happens at the high-end side and the luxury side at the very beginning, because that's where the early adopters are. They have money. So basically, a lot of the new digitalization is happening always in any vertical in the luxury high-end segment. And that's what happened 10 years ago, where there's companies like Yuke's, Net-a-Porter, Farfetch that actually connect boutiques to high-endish products. And then 7 years ago, it kind of trickled down to the full price segment, you know, the typical department store business where there's, you know, a lot of online retailers like Amazon in the US or Zalando, which is a 10 billion euro company here in Europe, that basically consolidate all the different brands and sell them at full price. But the biggest segment in fashion, that's the one that we are tackling, is where, you know, Primark, Forever 21, and H&M, and Inditex, group with Zara, Bershka, and so forth are actually in, and that people call fast fashion, which is completely vertically integrated, so they own usually the whole supply chain, and then, you know, can provide consumers very, very good value for money, usually, you know, 60, 70% cheaper than those full-price branded retailers because, you know, they don't work with middlemen. They don't, you know, charge for a lot of marketing and advertising campaigns and because the logo looks nice, but because they just try to have provide good value for money and fashionable styles. And that was kind of a very underserved market online because a lot of the companies were focusing at the high-end market and the kind of the upper middle class. And what we said and what we saw is, you know, with the increased penetration of smartphones, everyone, you know, also the middle class, lower income classes, will have access to the internet and will start shopping on the internet. We want to give them an offer. You know, if those companies, if those people, you know, shop a lot with the Walmart or with the Primark or with a kind of H&M in the offline world, they're going to go digital. And we want to be the platform where they're actually going to end up buying.
And the idea is to see what's hot right now, and because you partner directly with these factories that suddenly have access, as you said, to mobile phones, electricity, and everything else that it takes to work in the modern world, you can very quickly create something similar to what's selling for very expensive and make it available on your site for much less.
Yeah, so I think we're not really only digitalizing this fast fashion value segment, we're also changing the way it works. By using technology. So to give you an impression of how that works in traditional retails, you know, you have a bunch of purchasers or merchandisers who go to fashion weeks, they zip a lot of cocktails, you know, and have a good time, and then they kind of say, you know what, I think green is going to be the color of the season. And then someone else says, no, it's going to be yellow. And then kind of they chit-chat a bit, and then they place orders for billions of dollars for what's going to happen in a year, right?
Yep.
And sometimes they're right, sometimes they're not. If someone has a 51% hit rate, it's better than, you know, he's already winning. He's not drawing the dice. And that's the industry that we went into. And it felt a bit weird for two reasons. One is there was so much data out there, why did no one really use it? And number two is, how can people now commit to what's going to sell in a year when I don't even know what's going to happen next week, right? So we're living in a world where people are with Snapchat, Instagram stories. Attention spans are super, like, I'm 28 now. My cousins, they're like 18, 20. They cannot focus for longer than 20 seconds, right? So I need to catch their attention. And if they see something now on TV, on Instagram, they want to buy it also now in the next few days and not wait a year. And so that's kind of what we did, what we saw. And we said, you know, we got to, first of all, not send our people to fashion shows, although it's cool, but and have them zip cocktails, but we're going to, you know, crawl the web and see what's trending real time now. What do people search for? What's kind of very popular? What do people share? What do people like? What's on, you know, what's on other websites highly ranked, and aggregate all this data and make this whole process not subjective, but actually very, very data driven.
How can you do that for style, for design? I can understand how you did it before with keywords to understand what you should bid on, but design is much harder to figure out what's hot.
Yeah, basically it's a lot of things, right? You're looking actually at, you can do it for keywords, no problem about that. So if you see, okay, a lot of people look for a bikini with a certain shape and color, you know that it's trending real time,
I can
right?
search for that. I can figure, how do I find out what shape and color people are looking for bikinis?
So you see what people are Googling and what's actually trending.
There's, you just go to Google Trends. So if I type in on Google Trends bikini, I could see.
Yeah, you can see that there's also companies that provide the information, like SimilarWeb and others. And I think that's not the big problem. The challenge is more the images, right? So basically, when you look at what people share on Instagram or on Facebook, or what's maybe trending and hot on full price or high end luxury websites. That's kind of where you need some, where you need to invest in your engineering team to understand image recognition and how you actually aggregate this data. Because accessing your data is not the issue. Aggregating and making sense out of it is what's is challenging. And we invested the last 3.5 years in kind of stepping kind of our capabilities up there. We have 50 engineers who work on that. And that's something that you know, we define as our core USP, because it kind of is a big game changer. Because if, you know, the normal hit rate of a retail business is 51% versus 49%, and you can increase that hit rate to, let's say, 70-80% of the products that you source and design and put on the website work well, that's a major game changer. Because what that means is you're more relevant for consumers, right? They see, hey, this company is always spot on with trends. But also, you have less products at end of the season you need to, you know, throw away or write off or say, you know, it didn't really work out, which costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we don't have those costs. And that's also how we can offer actually our consumers better prices to start with.
So, Roman, I see what you're – so as you're talking, I'm kind of making sure that I understand it and that I can follow along. So what I did was I went to Google Trends and I typed in bikini, because that's – somehow it came up in our conversation. Immediately underneath underneath the search option, I realized, hey, I could limit my search to image search. So I did that. And then underneath that, I could see that I can see related queries. And one of the hot queries is Selena Gomez bikini. That's one of the big trends. So I clicked on that. Apparently, Selena Gomez bikini is really hot, and Pop Sugar's covering it. I don't know what Heckler Spray is covering it, but she has a bunch of photos of herself in this bikini that people are now talking about. And so this is a very crude way of doing it, but essentially that's what you're talking about. You're saying a lot of people care about her bikini. If we partner up with these factories in China, we could produce it fast, make it available for them to buy on our site. That's what it was.
Exactly, because you know, people actually look for that. Everyone wants to buy it. But when is it coming in kind of into the stores? Probably 6 to 12 months, because that's the traditional turnaround time of retailers, right? And whereas we see, you know, it's super, super popular. The style that she's wearing and kind of the shapes, we're just going to go all in and create a few different styles around exactly this topic. And are gonna you know, be one of the first company to really offer that to consumers all across the 24 countries that we sell to at really amazing prices.
Okay, so I get now the thinking behind it. I know you had some connections to Chinese factories, but you needed now a whole business around it. So you partnered with a CTO and you said to him, I need you to build a website. How fast?
Yeah, so this was September 2013, and I said, you know, we need it in 8 weeks. Why? And, you know, he basically said...
You said to him, I need you to build a website for me for this new business idea that I just gave you in 8 weeks.
Exactly. Okay. That's the timeline. And then he asked the question that any smart person would ask, you know, why? Why? And, you know, it was actually, you know, Christmas and holiday season. So everyone knows that this is kind of the most popular season. So you want to be live with your website in time, which was in our case, November. So that was enough to convince him to actually commit to this timeline. And yeah, that's what happened. We actually launched exactly 8 weeks later.
He built the website. While he was building the website, what were you supposed to do?
So basically I was hoping that he would be able to do it in 8 weeks. So, but, you know, roughly 1.5 weeks before we were about to launch, he said, you know, Roman, the website looks quite good. You know, I'm confident that we can actually, you know, go live, but there's one big issue. And I was like, yeah, what is it? You know, surely we can fix it. It's like, yeah, you know, we kind of need products to be able to present at the website, because, you know, we want to sell. It's like, yeah, shit, we haven't really thought about that. And so, you know, where do you find products, especially you want to make them at a good price and you want to, you know, make sure that they're selling well. And I was really busy with closing our financing rounds and hiring the first people, you know, employees. And basically what we said is, you know, we hired people, engineers, we hired people for the graphics team, for the marketing team, for the supply chain team, everyone except the engineers. I got into my car and we actually drove to the port, again, in Hamburg, where there's a lot of containers from China arriving, right? So we went there and asked the guys, you know, is there anything, do you know what's arriving? You know, we'd be looking for some fashion, some shoes, whatever you can give to us. And I said, no, well, we have no idea what's arriving. Just open the container. So we opened the container. There's a bunch of things, you know, a lot of things. And we said, you know what, you know, we just got to take most of it. Tell us a price. They're, you know, quoting us a price. We couldn't believe how amazingly affordable that is. And but then obviously we said, what if it's gonna sell? Well, can we actually replenish with you guys and, you know, reorder? I said, no, we, you know, it's just stuff arriving, and we cannot make sure it's always the same stuff that arrives. So it was really, really unprofessional in a way. But we actually took the products, drove back. You know, I asked my other co-founder Matthias to go into kind of the backyard in November. It's gray, you know, almost raining. And we did, you know, a few pictures with a smartphone camera, and put it on the website. And because I had kind of the experience of my previous company, I didn't expect a lot of sales. But actually, we had, you know, one or two news articles, and sales went through the roof the very first day. And that was really impressive.
Wait, because you got some news articles about this?
Yeah, so we didn't really promote it even that much. We you know, we just had we emailed all of our friends about it, and we said, you know, guys, here's, you know, hope you like it. It's like some really nice shirts for $2.99, and then there's some really nice pants for $4.99, and everyone was like, is this a scam? How can, you know, those cool things be so cheap? And you know, they kept forwarding it. There was one or two news articles, and by the end of the day, we were like super surprised how much revenue we generated, especially because I knew how hard it was, you know, at my first company. And, you know, that
Roman, you were supposed to be testing, can you create fashion fast, right? All you were doing, though, was testing, can you take anything that comes off the boat, literally, in Hamburg, and put it online and sell it?
Exactly. And that was also what we said. You know, we said, if we can actually launch with a really, you know, in 8 weeks, Let's be honest, you cannot create an amazing website. So basically, you know, we said, fucking ship it, let's do it live, and then we can continuously improve. That's kind of our mentality until this very day, you know, that speed is so important. I just want to launch and, you know, continuously improve versus waiting weeks and months and years to make it picture perfect. And the same is true for everything. You know, we just launched a website. You know, it was clear for us that in 8 weeks we weren't able to kind of convince suppliers to work with, even produce for us. So we just took what's available, and the same for pictures. You know, we were not doing amazing pictures; it was smartphone pictures. But you know, because it sold, it gave us a huge confidence, because we said, if all of this, we see so much potential for improvement, but if it works already like this, we're really off to something great. And that was kind of you know, a very motivating moment for all of us.
So what you were proving was we could sell cheap stuff on our cheap fashion on our site. Not necessarily the kind of fashion we want to sell, but we can sell. How did you get people to notice beyond the media?
So it was I think when we started, it was really a big growth in two things. It was, you know, especially mobile. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of mobile traffic, and there was also a time when companies invested a lot of time, especially social networks, but also like Facebook, but also, you know, Google invested a lot of time in improving their mobile websites, their apps. And so there was a lot of traffic on those platforms, but not too many online retailers, you know, having really great responsive websites, A, and B, you know, advertising a lot on mobile. And that's where we came in, and we saw, you know, this is just perfect for us, because our customers, they don't necessarily own a big laptop or a big computer at home. They spend most of the time on social networks, browsing around gaming websites. So, you know, we partnered with a lot of different gaming websites, dating websites. So all of those places where there's a lot of traffic, but it's hard to monetize, and it was all mobile. And that's kind of what we try to be really great at. And, you know, also innovate around making our commerce website as mobile friendly as possible, and continuing to improve there. And that's how we kind of scaled in the very first few months and quarters.
By the way, I'm still looking as you're talking to see how this stuff works. So here's something. Tell me if I'm wrong about this. Apparently there was a post on Reddit about a guy named Giorgio De Mare. He went into the desert wrapped in fur, So people were talking about him. Then others were Googling Giorgio De Mare Reddit, I guess, to find it. According to SimilarWeb, that's one of the top keywords that links to your website. When I go to your website and I look to see what comes up for Giorgio De Mare, I see a Giorgio De Mare black shirt at 70% off. Is that it, or am I being a little too clever here? Is that what happens, that this guy goes into the desert, people start Googling him, then his fashion starts to become a little interesting, and people who are looking for clothes with him, inspired by him, whatever, end up on your site and buy?
So I mean, that's one way. There's obviously a lot of different ways how people work, but I think the traffic itself, right? So I think the traffic itself is by now for us very, very, or at least a big chunk is organic, right? So we kind of invested a lot into our brand. We did a lot of TV commercials. We did a lot of collections with celebrities and influencers. So it's not really a traffic source for us, but the whole aspect of a lot of things and trends happening and, you know, at real time and us making use of that, that is definitely how we actually select our merchandise. But it's more kind of inspiration for what merchandise to select and less of a traffic source. So, yeah. But a good idea, you know, we should probably do a bit more on that.
Yeah, you do get a lot of traffic from Google, but I don't see that much traffic headed over to your website, at least according to SimilarWeb. Is it lazara.com? Is that what I should be looking at?
No, so we have local domains for all the countries. So .de.
Let me look up .de.
Yeah, .de, .it for Italy, .nl for Netherlands.
And you're not really in the U.S., right? Because even if I go to lazara.com, I see prices in euros.
So we're not shipping to the U.S. yet.
Okay, so according to SimilarWeb, lazara.com, one of the top keywords is hoverboard. And I could understand why that would be so big. Excuse me, lazara.de, one of the top keywords is hoverboard. Yeah. All right, let me take a moment here to talk about my second sponsor, and then we're going to come back and find out what happened after this short test and how did you keep growing from there, and what happened with the 7-Eleven copycat down the street that caused trouble with your packages. But first, anyone who's listening to me has got to hear about this guy, Brian Harris, a good friend of mine. Brian became obsessive about growing his email list, and he said, you know what, if I'm really going to grow my email list, I need to be aware of what my number is and what my goal is. So he set a goal of hitting 100,000 email subscribers, and he said, I want to be aware of how close I am to my goal every day. And then he noticed, you know, the thing I stare at all day long is my Chrome browser. And what would happen if every time I opened up a new tab, instead of seeing those eight boxes representing the most frequently visited sites, what if instead of that, I actually saw how close I was getting to my goal of hitting 100,000 subscribers? So he said, that would be awesome. So he hired a developer to create it for him. He got the plugin working, and then he made it available to other people. Suddenly he had this piece of software that other people could use. And when he made it available to them, many people were able to register for a site where they could learn how to grow their email list and follow along as he was growing his email list. It became a phenomenal success for him and also kept him growing his software development chops. And today he's got multiple products and a huge mailing list that's far surpassed 100,000. Last I heard it was 150,000, and he's growing it very fast since then. The reason I bring this up is I know that if you're listening to me, you might have an idea for a new product, a new feature that you want to add to your business, but maybe you don't have the right developer for it because you're focused on a different kind of platform. Like he wasn't focused on Chrome browser plugins. Or maybe what you have is a team of people who can do it, but they just can never find the time and you don't know how to find the right developer to get your idea up and running fast. Well, if that's you, I really want to turn you on to this site called TopTal. Top as in top of the mountain, top of your head, top of the list, best of the best. TopTal, TopTal.com. When you go there, they will listen to what you want to build. In fact, they'll actually start off by having a conversation with you, understand how your business works, how you organize, how you communicate internally, and then they'll make a recommendation for the right developer for you to work with. Often within one or two recommendations, boom, they'll nail the right fit and you'll be able to get to work with them. And when you do, because they're the best of the best, you will end up with a product that's quality, that will last, that will allow you to really build your business. If you want to start with TopTal, instead of the URL that I gave earlier, I've got a special URL that is a secret one just for Mixergy listeners, where you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. Think about that. 80 hours of developer credit. You'll get that in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks, so there's no risk in working with them. All you have to do is go to toptal.com/Mixergy, toptal.com/Mixergy, and I'm grateful to them for sponsoring. Roman, you were saying that the package that you were initially moving very fast, you didn't have a warehouse. What's this 7-Eleven copycat? How did that factor into your original launch?
Yeah, so that was a big challenge, because obviously we didn't have a warehouse, as you said. We stored everything in our office, and we called actually last mile delivery partner, which is in our case DHL, and said, you know, guys, we have 10 orders, 15 orders. Could you actually come pick it up? And they actually laughed and said, you know, guys, call us back when you have 100 a day. Yeah.
DHL won't pick up even 10 orders from you?
No, they weren't. They said, oh, let's just go to our state post station, which was 1.5 kilometers away. And, you know, 1 mile, more than 1 mile.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they'll do that. And so basically we had a 7-Eleven style business, so, which is open 24/7. And they usually partner with DHL, and you could actually leave your parcels and your packages there. So we asked the guy, you know, could we actually, you know, give you earn some extra bucks, you know, just keep it for us, and, you know, head it over to the DHL kids when they come over. And he said, yeah, no problem. You know, I'm always happy to support entrepreneurs, always happy to do that. So did this first day, second day. And then obviously we were kind of scaling really fast, so we ended up having, you know, over 100 orders a day, I think 2 weeks later. And what happened is actually that at some point in time he called and said, you know, guys, that's it. You know, get DHL to pick up your stuff. He said, what happened? He said, yeah, my customers, my clients cannot enter the store anymore because it's full with your packages. get your shit back. So that was kind of an interesting thing, and we ended up you know, working with a partner to set up a warehouse, which we did back then. But it was funny how quick things went. Yeah. So you still buy my water or my chewing gum there, and we have a good laugh about that.
And now, one of the things that you did after was you actually went to Asia and you set up an operation there. Why? Why not? We're living in a very distributed world. You can get on Skype, you can get on WhatsApp, you could communicate with factories in anywhere in the world, frankly. Why did you decide that you had to be in Asia and have a physical presence there as a company?
Yeah, I mean, look, we were growing super fast. So we were awarded last year fastest growing tech company in Europe, and we were kind of trying to kind of have our suppliers scale with us, because obviously today you're ordering 1,000 pieces, and then the next week you're already ordering 2,000, and you know not everyone can scale with that, and they're risk averse, so they wouldn't add up their capacities. So what happened is, you know, we started connecting with those factories via email, via Skype, as you mentioned, and you know it just felt at some point in time weird because you're doing prepayments partially, and the Skype idea of the guy is, you know, sugar candy 99, and you're transferring him $50,000. Just felt a bit weird because, especially, you know, you wouldn't show his camera, and you know, we said, you know, we gotta just fly over and see what's going on, and I flew over with two other colleagues, and we said, you know, we need to be there because at the end of the day, supply chain is what makes us special. We want to be fast. We want to offer great quality. We want to control the whole supply chain to make sure that, you know, there's no delays there whatsoever, and that's why we need to kind of be there, control everything, and also help the guys that we work together with, the entrepreneurs, because at the end of the day, it's also entrepreneurs, help them in professionalizing, in digitalizing, and that's one of our core missions now, to help factories digitalize their own work to make them more efficient, because if they're more efficient, they can get more done. If we help them prioritize, if we connect them to our interface and our technology, they save costs. They have more output, and that's kind of beneficial for all of us. So, but that's the vision, or that's where we are now 3 years after. When I first went there, it was actually mission impossible, because you have to imagine, you know, we're going to those factories that we went, you know, knew from the fair. No one else speaks Chinese whatsoever, right? So obviously, there are only very few people speak English. So we went around and, you know, asked those factories and said, you know, guys, we know that you produce for H&M, you produce for Hugo Boss, you produce for Nike, big quantities, you know, millions of products. But what we want to do is something else. You know, we believe that online is the future, fast, agile retail is the future. And, you know, we want to test and A-B test and be agile. So instead of producing a few million, you just produce 100 pieces for us. You give us the same prices as the big guys who produce millions. And instead of, you know, waiting 9 months for the order, we want to have it in 2 weeks. And literally one after the other kicked us out, you know. Of course, you know, what's in it for them? And so you know, we were very, very frustrated. But and then at some point in time, there was a guy who was actually not the owner of the factory, but kind of a salesperson. He said, you know, after the meeting went again horrible, the guy said, you know what, you can either pay 10 times the price or, you know, you just get kicked out because I'm not going to do 100 quantities. Come back if you want to order 100,000. And, you know, the sales guy actually went out with us and said, you know, sorry how the meeting went, but I completely buy into your vision. I believe this is the future. I believe, you know, if you can give me a chance, give me a few orders, I'll set up my own factory and I'll do it with you. And this was kind of where we got our first supplier.
The sales guy who was working for another factory said, you know what, I'll start a whole new business here just to partner with you guys. You'll be my first client. And you said, all right.
Yes. And you know, we had a leap of faith and we believed in this guy. He was super, super professional, our age. So we said, you know, why not? And now it's one of our biggest partners. We are very, very happy. And, you know, he is one of the role models in how he digitalizes his whole operations and how he manages the whole flow. And it's just, you know, always very happy. But now we work very, very closely, almost exclusively with over 200 factories. And, you know, it's just fun to work with them and, you know, change the world of how fashion and retail works without any middleman in between and with being very, very flexible and agile and data driven.
One of the things that I heard was that the first office that you set up there was actually not an office at all, but an apartment. And when you first saw it, you gave marching orders to the team. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah. So basically, you know, we went into the, you know, we didn't have, you know, any license whatsoever, and actually went back with two colleagues, and we hired our very first employees. One was actually the one that helped us with the translation. So we said she's an amazing translator. We'll give her a chance. She now runs our sourcing division with over 40 people who just do the sorting. Second one, who ended up being our office manager, we actually went into a Japanese supermarket. And, you know, it's super hard because no one actually speaks English. So we said, you know, we just want to have some soap and we want to have, you know, some toothbrushes. So no one could actually refer us. And they referred us to a small little kid. She was literally 1.40 meters or so and said, she's the only one who speaks English. We talked to her and she's like, yeah, I'm working in a Japanese supermarket. I like it. I like the international culture and I'm super helpful. And we said, you know what are you doing here? You should come and join us. And she's now running office measures. So this was our first 2 hours, amazing people. Mm-hmm. And this is how we got started. And, you know, you have to imagine that back then we didn't have a license. We didn't have an office. So we showed them the office, which was an apartment, basically a 3-room apartment. We said, you know what, pick a room. That's going to be your room. And they were also a bit confused because they thought they're now going to work with the international Western company for tiny offices. But yeah, we scaled quite quickly, and after a few weeks, we had 20 people there, and again, it was still a three bedroom apartment, and you know, we ended up, you know, having supplier meetings in the living room. Then if you had another meeting outside on the terrace, it was like 40 degrees Celsius. That's almost 100 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, sweating but meeting, and then if you had an interview with another candidate, you could just say, you know, do you want to be interviewed in the kitchen or in a toilet, right? And still a lot of people came because they felt that they're part of something great and felt how passionate we were about it. But it was definitely those typical startup times. Yeah.
What does Lasara mean?
It's a combination of the two most popular female kids' names in Europe. So we kind of said, we tried to look for something that's available in alldomains.com, .at, .de, And it's literally, you know that better than me, it's literally impossible because you want to have to do something that people can remember. If you do a TV campaign, people can actually memorize. And I was looking literally hours and hours, and then I just browsed and saw what was the most popular names. And one was Leah, and the second one was Sarah. And, you know, Leah.com was obviously gone, Sarah.com as well, but Lizara, which is now the combination, was not gone. And that was kind of...
Yeah, and you do have it on so many different top-level domains. And you seem to have partnerships also that send over business, like T-Mobile's shopping experience sends you guys traffic, and that's one of the biggest sites in Germany.
Exactly. So we do a lot of partnerships with you know that's, I think, the beauty about us being in Berlin is we have a very international company. So 80% of our team is actually non-German. So we kind of try, we have a completely localized experience no matter where you buy. If you buy from France, if you buy from the UK, if you buy from Sweden, you have your local payment methods, you have your local delivery options. And we advertise, obviously, with a lot of local companies, right? Like T-Online is one of the biggest email portals in Germany. We have, you know, per country, usually 50 to 100 affiliate partners that we really generate a lot of traffic with, which helps us to kind of, you know, provide a localized experience while leveraging our global scale.
Yeah, I see that. And I do see the value of these partnerships that you're embedded in some of these companies' sales sites. Mm-hmm. And then also there are some fashion sites that send you guys a lot of traffic that you're, I can't tell if you, do you partner with the fashion sites or are they just recommending you or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, it's like fashion aggregators, blogs. It's a lot of kind of, it's a mix. Sometimes it's just an aggregator, like a typical affiliate, where, you know, they aggregate dresses from all sorts of websites. Beauty about us working with them, a lot of people filter by price. So the top 20 dresses, 18 or 15 are from us. Plus, obviously, a great, amazing products and prices increase the click-through, so they actually generate way more click-outs with us. So that's why we kind of get...
And you pay them affiliate commissions, right?
Yes, of course. We pay them on a click or on a sale basis, depending on the model and how they operate.
I see. So like I see myliveshopping.de, for example. It's a German language shopping site. They send links out to a lot of different sites. But when it comes to clothing, I could see like your sweatpants are really inexpensive. So they bubble up to the top. If I'm looking for sweatpants, I see. And then they link over to you. Yeah. All right. You know what? One final question. It seems like this whole thing was an easy ride for you, right? Young guy in his 20s. Everything just kind of fell into place. No big challenges.
Well, I wouldn't call it this way, but I think it's kind of a state of mind and a mentality. Because to be honest, there's every single day kind of a bump. You know, a bomb coming and, you know, be it some legal actions against you or, you know, an employee, you know, maybe quitting or someone that you really want to have.
What's a big one? What's one that actually was tough for you?
I think there's no one single thing that was tough because kind of your relation also changes. Like in the very first days as an entrepreneur running a company, like the first time we got a letter from a lawyer, it was like, oh my God, we have to close down and, you know, shit hits the fan. And now it's kind of, you know, it's all relative in a way.
Do you remember what that first one was? What was that first letter from a lawyer that
worked? Yeah, it was some sort of guy where we have something called double opt-in and he claimed that he didn't do a double opt-in with a lawyer. And then there's a lot of kind of in all countries, regulations around what kind of material, how you have to kind of write on your product details, what material composition is in there and what pictures you have to add and what not. And so basically there's, you know, big industries just making money with that. And but in the first time you get this email, you're like, oh my God, I never had to do something with a lawyer. Am I going to end up in jail? but you know, you kind of get used to that. And I think, For every negative thing, there's, you know, 10 positive things. And I think, we try to focus on really the positive things and that give us a lot of energy and take us to the next level. And I think that's what's most exciting. And I feel that, that really made a difference. So at some point in time, for us, we figured out, you know, as a tech company, we don't have natural resources. We basically have just the talent that we own, and that we kind of could bring together. So we started investing a lot into company culture. So literally treating it as a return on invest. Where can we invest in company culture? What can we do around employer branding? and you know, just as you would do online marketing, right? And that kind of paid off super, super well for us, and increased kind of the loyalty of team members with the company, and you know, and brought us to the next level. And
why do you think Mickey Drexler of J. Crew failed? He's the guy who was behind Gap. He's I mean to close it out, but I've got to ask your opinion about it.
Yeah.
This is a company that and an entrepreneur that should be super successful right now. They're struggling. Why do you think?
No, I think, look, it's a different industry in a way, because of course it's also fashion, but I don't think that this comment is, you know, for J. Crew, but I think it's a more general comment around the whole fashion industry. People think that buying and running a fashion offline store is the same thing as running an online business, but it's not. You know, if you're an offline guy, you need to be the best around finding real estate. You're basically a real estate agent who knows how to window dress shop, right?
Yeah.
And do a bit of PR and branding. But that actually is really, I'm not a real good real estate guy. That's why I wouldn't be able to run an offline store. But actually running an online store is completely different. It's way, way more data-driven, tech-driven, speed-driven, everything, every day something else is happening. So, and the company culture and DNA is just very, very different. So it's completely different business. And I think those people never made the transition, never realized that they thought selling online is just the same as selling offline. And, you know, just the trend, the trend is against them, because online penetration at the moment is 12-14%, depending which country you look at. If you look at it by generation, kids under 25 spend 50% of their money online, and as those kids grow up, 50% of the spend is going to be online. So basically half of the companies offline will disappear. A lot of billion-dollar companies will disappear in the next 5 to 10 years, and just as many billion-dollar companies will appear in the online world. And I think that's just the way it is, because retail has been changing over the last decades. Every single decade, there's been a new trend. You know, you remember shopping malls you didn't exist 50 years ago. You know, people went into farmers markets. So I think that's just a natural course, and either you adapt and, you know, you try to embrace the change and innovation, or you're going to die. And I think that's what's happening here.
And I think he said as much. I think it was in a Wall Street Journal article where he basically said that's where they dropped the ball. And it's shocking, because he was a former board member of Apple. He was on Apple's board of directors. So it's shocking that
he should have seen it coming. Yeah, he should have seen it coming.
Yeah, but that's one of the problems with technology changing things, that even if you see it coming, even if you should, it's really hard to adapt. It's really hard to change. You guys are the website for anyone who wants to check it out is Lazara, which is Lasara dot whatever top level domain you happen to be in. I'm in the US. I did .com. If you guys are in the UK, it's .co.uk, etc. All right. Let me close it out by saying thank you to my two sponsors. If you're looking for a great web hosting solution, go check out hostgator.com/Mixergy. And if you want to hire great developers, go check out toptal.com/Mixergy. Thank you. And Roman, congratulations on your success.
Thanks a lot, Andrew. It's been an honor and a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Cool.